The Addiction Podcast, Point of No Return.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Addiction Podcast, Point of No Return. My name is Joni Siegel, and I'm the host for this podcast. Today's episode is episode number 217, and I would like to just give a little bit of a caveat because, I don't know, we're recording this on a Friday, and we have garbage trucks, and one of my neighbors is doing their lawn. So if you hear background noise, I apologize. That's what happens when you have your studio in your house. So today we are interviewing a gentleman. Now, this is kind of interesting. We have a presence on Instagram, and a fellow reached out on Instagram and said he had a friend that had a really good story. And so I said, well, have your friend email us. You know, we have an email, theaddictionpodcast@yahoo.com. And so he did. His name is Chris. He's 33 years old. He was born and raised in Washington, D.C. And this is very hard for me to say, but he was a heroin addict starting at age 12. And that makes me so sad. I don't even like to say it, but he has a history. And we're going to talk to him today. I'm going to have him tell us all about his addiction history and where he is today. He's turned his life around. And I think that stories like that are always something that are important for you guys to hear. You know, I think a lot of you have a loved one who's addicted, or you yourself are addicted, and maybe you just need that glimmer of hope that, you know, this guy can turn it around. And you know what? So can you, or your loved one as well. So without further ado, let's talk to Chris Smith. So Chris, is it Smith? Chris Smith?
Yeah, super.
Okay, Chris Smith, thank you for being on the podcast today, and thank you for being willing to share your story. Not everybody is, because I know that we're going to talk about a time in your life, which you might want to forget sometimes. But, you know, I think it's important because I think whenever someone like such as yourself tells their story on the podcast, it resonates with somebody who listens. And our hope is that either they get into treatment, or if they have a loved one that is addicted, that they get their loved one into treatment. So I really appreciate you being willing to share your story.
I appreciate you guys having me here to do this. So
absolutely. So how did you get started on drugs? I read a little bit about it in the intro, and it was pretty scary, but you didn't start with heroin, did you?
No, I, so my mom, so like my dad had left when I was five. And my mom, raised me and my mom and my grandmother, but my grandmother has like severe mental health issues. So my mom basically raised me, my younger sister, my older sister, and my grandmother. And when she met my stepdad, they moved out to, this place in Virginia called Sterling Park. And I think I was 11, and within like 2 weeks, I had met a kid riding my bike, a neighborhood kid. And, you know, we would duck off and go smoke cigarettes. And, by the time it was before I was 12, there was another kid in the neighborhood whose older brother was smoking weed. And, I wanted to smoke. The older kids did it. I was new. And I wanted to smoke, and they were like, no, dude, you're like 11. So I kind of like pissed them off and made them let me. And I took a gravity bong hit for the first thing I ever did in my life. Minus when I was six, I was prescribed Ritalin, Dexedrine, Adderall, Wellbutrin, all that stuff. But as far as abuse goes, I smoked weed at 11. And that was kind of what started everything.
Were you still taking Adderall and...
No, I was selling them though. No, I was selling them. By the time I was 10, I started realizing like older kids want these, and I started selling them.
Right.
So
because while they calm you down as a young kid, once you reach puberty, they have a tendency to speed someone up. So okay. Well, your career started early. Sorry for interrupting. You can keep going.
So I mean So it was like, I remember when I took this gravity bong hit, I ended up passing out, like bent over the arm of a couch. And when everything was said and done, I was like, I want to do that again. And it was kind of, I guess it would have been from like a very young age. Like I didn't know at the time, but like in retrospect, I definitely had like serious addictive traits. You know, if I liked something, and I still am like that, you know, if I like something, it's balls to the wall. I need to do it like 100% or I don't do it at all. And, you know, so by 12, weed was every day. I was smoking weed every day. And, I started selling weed in school, and, I got introduced, to be honest, I don't remember how it happened, but I was 12 and I'll never forget like the way that it was presented to me. Somebody gave me, to this day, I can't remember who it was, but somebody had given me an Oxycontin, a 40 milligram Oxycontin. And, I was like, what is this? You know what? I don't know what to do with this. And they were like, suck on it till the yellow part's gone and crush it up and sniff it. And I was like, but why would I do that? You know? And they're like, you think weed makes you feel good? This will make you feel good. Mm-hmm. So I did. I was scared because they made it seem like it was dangerous. But I was scared. So I did like a half of it. And I just that feeling, that warm feeling that came over me, it was game over. From that point on, I knew, like, this is what I've been searching for, even though I was only 12. Like, this is what I've been searching for. This is what makes me feel good. And it became an everyday thing within, like, 2 weeks. I was finding them. And then when I couldn't get the 40 milligram ones, it was the 80 milligram Oxycontins. And that was when everything really kind of like took off. You know, my mom didn't know, you know, like she knew I was getting into trouble and in school and, you know, fighting and things like that. But like, she didn't know that I was doing drugs. She knew I would smoke cigarettes and she, you know, my mom, she doesn't smoke anymore. But she used to smoke cigarettes and I used to steal her cigarettes and she used to know. But she knew that she couldn't do anything if she couldn't catch me. So, you know.
Well, you said she raised you and how many siblings?
My younger and older sister as well.
Right. So here's a single mom with three kids. Yep. I can understand how she might not have, you know, knew you were getting in trouble because she would hear that, but not necessarily have the attention, if you will, to observe what was going on. And I don't say that in any way to be disrespectful to your mother. Right. I, you know, it's difficult with three kids.
Right. And I was the black sheep as well. Like I was I'm the only boy. So I was mama's boy and, you know, I could get away with murder, you know? Mm-hmm. So my older sister, you know, had friends that were into whatever it was, you know, and my mom, they would have friends over and, you know, to this day, I'm not sure that my mom or even my older sister knows, but like I used to sell them pills and weed when I was like 12, you know. So by the end of my freshman year in high school, I was 13 and I was at this girl's house and her brother was a heroin addict. He was much older than us and he was a heroin addict. Come to find out, my next door neighbor was a raging heroin addict, much older than me, and didn't know that, but until later on. And it's crazy how everything like links together. So the guy whose house I smoked weed at the first time, his mom's boyfriend happens to be the cousin of my next door neighbor. So they were smoking crack and shooting heroin, smoking PCP. And, you know, so I was kind of introduced to all of that like super early.
Wow.
And when I was over at this girl's house, I told him that I wanted, I knew he was doing drugs, right? But I didn't know what. So I was like, right. I want Oxycontin. Like, I can't get it right now and I need it. Because at this point I now knew what being sick was. You know, I got sick for the first time at 13 years old and I experienced withdrawals and was like, the first couple times I didn't know what it was, but I knew that like all I wanted was to get high.
And when you say sick, you mean dope sick, right?
I mean in withdrawals, yeah. So I would search for it mainly with the older kids because I didn't really hang out with kids my age. So, yeah, I was over at the house. I told him I wanted OxyContins. He said he couldn't get them, but he had fentanyl patches. And he was melting them down and shooting them. And I wanted to shoot it. The whole like thing, just everything about drugs in general intrigued me. You know, I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. Come to find out it's the lamest thing ever, you know, but it's, I wanted to shoot it. And he was like, no, like this is not, don't ask me because I'm not going to, he said, I'm not going to pop your cherry. I'm not going to be the first one to do this because that is not going to be on my hands. So, he gave me a Valium, which I had never eaten a benzo before, gave me a Valium and I took it. And then he squeezed a fentanyl patch under my tongue. And, I remember him saying, oh shit. And I'm like, oh shit, what? He's like, spit it out. Like I gave you too much. And the mix between an opiate and a benzo anyway is deadly, but let alone fentanyl. And I didn't have a fentanyl addiction. It was OxyContin, and this is 10 times more powerful. So I spit it out, but I guess it was, it had already, like some of it had already absorbed under my tongue. And I didn't wake up for 2 days.
Okay. Now, how old are you when you did this?
13.
How old were you?
13. So it was like 2 days that I don't remember, but apparently I was in the bed at her house for 2 days. And I woke up and was like, what, you know, I thought it was just like a couple hours later. And she's like, dude, you haven't like been to school. Like we knew you were alive, but like, we thought you were just like passed out. And her mom was kind of like, I don't want to say alcoholic, but her mom partied. So we were allowed to party there. Mm-hmm. And things went unnoticed, like me being in a bed for 2 days. So, yeah, that, and when I came to, I was still high, and I was like, this is an amazing feeling. And I don't ever want to let this go. So I told him, I was there maybe a week later and I told him I wanted heroin, and he was like, nope, like this is, that's, you know, you're like really pushing this.
And but you know what's interesting to me, Chris, and I'm not a former addict, so I don't quite know the effects of the drugs on a personal basis, but isn't fentanyl way worse than heroin?
Yes.
So why would he think that was okay, but not shooting you up with heroin? I guess it doesn't have to make sense, does it?
I guess in like 2001, heroin had more of a taboo than a prescription fentanyl patch, you know? So, it still wasn't at the point that it is now. Right. So,
okay.
But money talks, especially for an addict who's in full blown addiction. So when I can help support his habit, he's going to give me what I want. Okay. And I paid for a bag of heroin, and that was the first time that I ever did heroin, and I sniffed it and I threw up for like 5 hours, just constant puking. And it tasted gross and bitter, and I hated it. And I was like, this, why do people do this, you know? But when I was done vomiting, the feeling was the same as the oxys but more powerful, and I was like, that's why people do this,
right?
So I went home, and a couple days later I asked my next door neighbor, because I knew something was up. I'm very observant. I've always been like that since a kid. And I don't know if you would call it a natural intuitive or whatever it might be, but like, I pick up on energy really easily, and I just knew my next door neighbor was into something. Plus, being around his cousin, who was my friend's mother's boyfriend, I knew that they did drugs. So I asked him, do you have dope? You know, do you have heroin? And the answer was no, but I can get you a Dilaudid. So I'm like, okay, we'll try that. So I did that, loved it, asked for it the next day. He said, no, but we're going to DC to get heroin. I said, okay, well, heroin it is. And, you know, here these guys are 24, 25, taking a 13-year-old into DC. Mind you, I'm very comfortable in DC. It's where I'm from. So, like, it wasn't a big deal. But the fact that, like, they're doing this because they're getting free drugs out of it, you know?
And where'd you get the money? Selling drugs? That's how you got the money to
selling weed,
habit, basically? Okay.
Yeah, selling weed and also, like, just minor things like mowing lawns and just little things like that, that, like, a typical young teenager would be doing to try and make a couple bucks.
Okay.
You know, or my mom, because she didn't know, you know. So, yeah, I rode into DC and we got these little black Ziploc bags, and he was like, can I get two of them? And I was like, yeah, sure. I'll pay you back. So never got paid back, but, you know, that was my, introduction to really the full experience of going to get it and everything like that, instead of just being somewhere where it shows up. And we got back and I went into his house and he was like, have you mainlined? And I was like, no, but I want to. And he's like, all right, cool. So he took a syringe, and it wasn't even a new one. He bleached the syringe to clean it. And he shot me up. And I, like, that was it. That was it.
Wow.
That was the point of no return. That was it right there.
Wow. Well, you mean the point of no return and that you were not going back on your addiction. Later on, I want you to tell me the point of no return when you decided to get
clean. Yeah, definitely, for sure.
This is the point of, you are now addicted and not coming back from that right away.
It would take years. It took years before I decided to make the decision to get my life together. But that...
Did you finish school? Did you keep going to... No?
Yeah, no, I finished.
Oh,
yeah.
You finished. You graduated from high school and...
Mm-hmm. So I got my GED, actually.
Okay.
So at 13, this is all happening around the same time, I joined a gang. I was doing things for them that, you know, to this day I still live with. So it was more of a, I guess I just wanted to fit in somewhere. And when I was on drugs, I fit in everywhere. So it kind of went hand in hand. And some of the things that I had to do, like, I couldn't do unless I was on drugs.
Right.
So, you know, but I didn't skip school. I always went to school. I'd sit there and put my textbook in front of me and sniff drugs while I was in school, or I'd shoot heroin in the bathroom. But I went. You know, and then I just kept getting suspended and, for like fighting and, you know, the other gangs and stuff, like the kids. And, there was this, a really bad, I guess you could say, like, a really bad beating of someone, and, somebody got stabbed, and I got, sent to an alternative school. So, like, basically,
you did the stabbing, or you were with the person that did the stabbing?
No, I was just there. I helped beat the kid up, but I'm not the one that stabbed him. So, that it kind of just got worse. I started trying everything else, like, you know, LSD and mushrooms. And I had about a year long run with ecstasy, where I was going into clubs underage and I was eating them in school. And like, I was just constantly high, constantly just out of my mind. I was shooting cocaine by the time I was 14, with a full blown IV heroin addiction. And I would speedball. And I remember going into a few different psychosis episodes, you know, fighting my stepdad and pulling a gun on him, and him literally, like, fighting me in the hallway, trying to get it away from me and stuff like that. So.
Okay. Now your mom knows, I'm assuming.
Yeah. She's aware.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't know what to do, but she knew I was doing drugs. She just didn't know the severity. Like, she knew I had, like, to her, I had, like, dabbled in cocaine. Like, I had sniffed coke a couple times. You know, it wasn't a big deal.
Right.
He's young. He'll try it. It is what it is. You know? And she knew I was smoking weed. And when she found me growing weed in my room, that was when she was like, okay, are you going to tell me? I've always been really close with my mom, so I've always been able to tell my mom anything. So that was when she's like, are you going to tell me what's going on? And it just so happened to be like at the same day that I came home the night before. I had gotten jumped really bad. I had gotten beat up by like 15 people. And I was hit in the head with a beer bottle twice, and it didn't break, but it cracked my head open. I had Timberland boot prints on my face, my back completely swollen with Nike and Reebok prints. And, and I didn't care at the time. I just kept getting high. The next day, my mom was like, okay, your face is fucked up. Your body is completely fucking bruised. You have shoe prints on your neck and face. Like, can you tell me what's going on? And I'm finding weed in your room. So I told her I'm in a gang. I can't get out. And I'm doing drugs. You know, that was how I said it. I didn't say specifically what drugs, but I told her I was doing drugs. And you know, she cried and she didn't know what to do. But that was also, I was 14 at this point. Okay. So the end of 14, almost 15. I had been really bad with wanting to try every drug I could get my hands on. And at this point, I had the connections to get whatever I wanted. So like everyone in school, even the kids that were out of school and graduated, all knew like, oh, you want drugs, you go to Chris, you know. And it just kind of got a lot worse, especially when I started shooting cocaine regularly. That was when things really, really got bad. I got stabbed over a cocaine deal that went bad. The first one I was stabbed in my side twice. So like in this area twice. Yep. And, I've been stabbed twice and shot twice, but those are like later on. So, I got stabbed and, didn't go to the hospital. I didn't do anything. Instead, my whole mentality at the time was, okay, he stabbed me over $120 because he wanted cocaine, obviously. The messed up thing was I was going to rob him anyway. I didn't have coke for him, but his whole thing was he was going to rob me. So it kind of like went bad. It was bad from the start. Yep. But yeah, he stabbed me. And I ended up catching him somewhere else the same night and retaliated. And that was the first time that like things had gotten really serious as far as like, we'll say like police go. And stuff
did
like
you,
that.
Did you stab him or did you just beat him up?
No, I shot him.
Oh, okay.
And it, you know, and I can say it because this is all over with. Like, this is all done. So I am not going to incriminate myself. But yeah, so that was when, like, once that happened, between that, the drugs, and everything else, my mental health being like horrible at the time, depression, I'm not going to say I'm bipolar, but like I definitely showed signs of it at a young age. And well,
when you're doing that much drugs and you're involved in a gang like that, I would kind of be surprised if you were walking around perfectly normal and happy mentally.
Yeah. Just saying. And I was actually getting I can't like go into super detail, but I was getting punished, we'll say, by the gang for doing drugs. We weren't allowed to do that. And so I'd be getting beat up 2-3 times a week. You know,
wow.
So
why did they kick you out? You said you couldn't leave if you continue.
Doesn't work like that. And plus, when you have somebody who is active, who's ready to do whatever at any given time, they're not going to let go of that. So it got to the point where they just said, fuck it. He's going to do what he wants to do, you know, but he's a good, you know, he's a shooter. We got him on the team and he does what he needs to do. Like, so we're just going to let him get away with it. You know, because they got
to just ask you without like getting, I don't want to get you into any kind of trouble, but like what kind of a gang? Like, was it like I don't know, when I think of gangs, I think of they're either like African American or they're Hispanic. So
African American, specifically, specifically, Seven Tray Gangsta Crip, and it wasn't not East Coast gang, West Coast. So I became affiliated with the West Coast at a very young age. So it wasn't one of the fake gangs, you could say, because there was a lot of them around here at the time. So, but there was a few that were actually real, where the guys were from Los Angeles. And that's the people who I got involved with. And they actually ended up being the people who I was selling cocaine for. Okay. So
so you went to jail, presumably, when you shot somebody. And
no, I didn't go to jail. I got
probation.
No, I guess you could say because I got put on probation for something else. It just so happened at the time I had weed on me when I did get brought up on this, and they found me. Because I was somewhat on the run, but not really, because I would still go home. So if it was a big deal, they'd come to my house. That was my thinking. That was my thought. Well, I left my house one night and I had weed on me, and they stopped me.
Okay. And,
they were like, look, we know what you did. And of course, deny. You know, so that didn't stick, but the weed did. So they did put me on probation, but it wasn't for that.
I got
And I violated probation immediately. And I, my probation officer basically, they put me on house arrest, and they were like, because I immediately failed for cocaine and heroin and ecstasy and methamphetamines and everything else. And they were like, dude, you're going to die. So you're young. At this point, I was 15. They're like, you are young. Like, you can't be failing drug tests for all this. Like, you're going to go to juvie. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to juvie, you know? And my whole thought process was, if I go into jail, there's no way I can keep getting high. And I didn't want to be sick in jail. And I had heard stories of how juvenile detention centers were like gladiator schools, just nonstop fighting and you know, kids being like boys raping each other and things like that. And yikes. So like I was actually scared of that, you know.
Yeah.
But
scared of that wasn't enough to make you get clean.
No.
Okay.
No. So they put me on house arrest, and they told me that I would have a house arrest officer coming by my house randomly to make sure I was there. I would leave. I didn't care. So instead of putting me in jail, I was given the option to go to treatment, because they thought that this was, you know, I was tagged in the federal system as a gang member at a very young age. So they thought that, like, it's not the gang activity. He's just, he's on drugs. So they, and mind you, this is like 2003, 2004. So, or 2002, 2003, around there. So they're like, you know, rehab. So I went into treatment, and it didn't really go great. I mean, it went how treatment would normally go. I detoxed from the heroin, and it was a state facility, so I didn't get the opportunity to take medication. At this time, the only thing around, Suboxone was around, but it wasn't really heavily used in detoxes and stuff yet. It was more methadone. So, but I didn't get to use anything except for Benadryl and ibuprofen. So I kicked, and I knew that if I didn't, you know, they said if I complete treatment, I get off probation, right? Because the charge was a weed charge. So I completed, I got off of probation, and within a couple of days, I was shooting heroin again. And things kind of progressed from there more seriously with like everything else as well. Just my whole world was just falling apart. So I guess we fast forward, you know, typical drug use kept going, didn't stop. So at like 16, I had a group of friends that I was close with. So at 16 years old, we were in the car, and, two of my friends, were twin brothers. One had short hair, one had long hair. That's the way you could tell them apart. And his brother was in the front seat. Another one of our friends was driving, And because by now we all have our licenses and stuff like that. So, and he was next to me, and a car pulled up next to us, fired one shot, and I felt my head like just boom hit the window, and my initial reaction is to grab, like, you know, my face, and it was just warm and wet, and I was like, holy shit, I got shot. They shot me in the head, and I looked down, and you know, there was blood all over my hands, but as I continued to move my head, I saw that he was in my lap with half of his head gone. So it was his brain matter in my mouth. And that I can say that that was the point where, like, my mental health went to a point that there was no, I didn't think that I would ever be the same. And I mean, honestly, I'm not the same, but that was when I was like, okay, I don't care about anything. Like, right. No one cares about me. You know, the whole pity pot.
You can't get any worse, basically, right. At that point. You're, you know, rock bottom, so to
exactly.
speak. Yeah.
So I'm like, he's dead. His brother just watched his twin get killed. And we decided that, like, war was inevitable. That's what we were gonna do. So within 4 weeks, we had been going back and forth with this other gang, and things got pretty bad, and his brother found out who killed him, and he went to go kill him, and on the way there, the guy who killed his brother, his cousin, caught him and shot him in the back of the head without him even knowing, and killed him. So his mom lost
God.
His mom lost her sons within, you know, within a month. And me and...
Story
and
my... is like the worst movie ever. It's horrific. I mean, I appreciate you sharing it with us. And I think, you know, it's important, but I just feel bad for you. I mean, what you've gone through.
I mean, I guess it's just a part of it. I don't know. That's just how it happens, you know, and we're conditioned to believe, like, you know, you're going to die or you're going to go to prison. That's it.
It's a different culture. You were involved in the whole drug culture, and there you go.
And so within a 7-month period, just to shorten this down, within a 7-month period, I watched one of our other friends that we were close with, I watched him get shot twice and killed, and I held him while he died. I watched the light leave his eyes, basically.
Wow.
And, so I was by myself. I had no more friends. I still had my friends, but I didn't have my brothers. You know what I mean? Like, those were my right. brothers. So that was it. Nobody cared. My life didn't matter. Nothing's going to be worse than this. I'd rather be dead. So I was very reckless. Very, very reckless. After that, now I'm 17 at this point, and I got into a very big heroin operation, and I got in over my head, basically. So there was a lot of money involved, and when there's a lot of money, there's a lot of risk. Where there's a lot of risk, there's people who are willing to die for that money,
right?
And the trips to Baltimore now were daily. This is when Philadelphia wasn't the epicenter of the epidemic. It was Baltimore, you know.
Okay.
So I was going to Baltimore 2 to 3 times a day, which is an hour from me. So just the money in the suburbs was crazy. My habit could be supported by selling drugs. And I could sell drugs because I had the connections. I had the connections because... if somebody took me to a new guy when my guy wasn't around, or I mean, to be honest, most of the time I met these people just by driving. I'd drive up and they would literally flag me down and step in front of my car. You know, it was open air just the way Kensington is now. And I got involved with somebody who was moving a lot of heroin, and by a lot, I mean like multiple kilos a week.
Wow.
And, so my habit was just, you know, it was free dope. And all I had to do was sell to other kids, and I drive to Baltimore a couple of times. Like, sounds good to me. And 2005, I was in alternative school for my senior year in high school. And I wasn't, I failed algebra the major like every year, so they just put me in geometry my senior year. Little did I know that one credit was going to keep me from graduating. But I was only there for a semester and I was supposed to graduate early, but they didn't tell me any of this until after that. So I was like, oh, okay, so can I come back for the second semester and just finish off with algebra? No. So I was like, oh, so now school won't let me graduate. It's fuck everything now. You know, so the my girlfriend who I was dating at the time, she actually just passed away last year from an from MRSA, from an infection from getting high.
Oh, I'm
Yeah,
sorry.
she was in the hospital. She left the hospital, didn't want to be there because she was sick. So she left the hospital, got a block away from the hospital, and collapsed and died. So, you know, the whole 16, 17, 18 years old thing was just a blur, kind of. So I
Well,
caught my
when did you decide to get sober, Chris?
just about 2 years ago, actually. So I'd had, but I had, but prior to this, I had some significant clean time a couple different times, you know. So,
Okay.
April, so with school or whatever, I turned 18. Well, at 17, I was technically, I got charged with, I got set up and charged with the heroin charge. A pretty serious charge, especially for, I was in Virginia. So for Virginia, especially in 2005, they did not play games with heroin. Like that was a, it's a commonwealth, you know?
Yep.
So it was a very serious thing, especially with like what, you know, took place. And, so I got charged and charged as an adult. And
Wow.
so they kind of brought up everything, you know. I got a bond. I bonded out and violated my bond. Couldn't get clean. And there was heroin that was really, really good coming from Baltimore, and a guy, April 13th, 2006. I was still fighting this case. April 13th, 2006. There's a guy. Nah, he wasn't a friend of mine, but he was a friend of everyone else that I knew. He died from the heroin, right? So this was the first time we had like really heard, you know, like overdose. April 14th, 2006, I overdosed for the first time on the same heroin. And it was a hot shot. It was insecticide.
Ooh.
So, and I remember it vividly, very vividly. I did it. Everyone said, be careful, dude. Like, be careful because this is good. So only do one. And it was the little vials. And at the time, I was doing four or five vials, so I was like, "Why would I only do one? That's stupid." So when they didn't, when they weren't looking, I added another half of one in, just whatever. And I remember I did it. I got this hot feeling, and all of a sudden, I just like, I've never in my life, still to this day, and I work out religiously, right? Like I bodybuild now and stuff like that. So, still to this day, I've never felt my pores on my face and body open up to drip water, to drip
Wow.
sweat. I start pouring sweat. I'm lightheaded. My tongue went numb. I knew immediately something was wrong. And I kept like, I leaned, he had a bar, finished bar in the basement where we were. And I leaned up against the bar like this. And I was like, yo, something's wrong with this dope, man. Something's wrong with this dope. And then they were like, what are you talking about? You know, they're like, bro, the dope's fine. Like we've been doing it all day. And I'm like, no, something's wrong with this.